Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and our friend Paul Koch. Paul does a lot at 1517. He's a co-host of the Ringside podcast. He works on the craft of preaching and writing articles for the craft of preaching, doing the videos for the craft of preaching, getting other professors and stuff to write for the craft of preaching. He does the relations side of that. You go and drink with seminary professors till they agree to write some exegetical material. And you've been on the Thinking Fellows a handful of times, even this year. You drove all the way up to Big Bear.
I escaped. Came to see you guys. That was great. I enjoyed that.
That was a fun time. Yeah. We almost got my wife's truck stuck at least twice.
At least twice, yeah. Oh. Good.
Yep. Once in a puddle and once in snow. And who knew there was still snow as we went that high? We didn't, but we found out.
So the last couple episodes of the Thinking Fellows, we've been participating in a live stream of Here We Still Stand 2020. And as we've done that, we've had various guests come up and record Thinking Fellows because, man, we really haven't been doing a lot of in-person recording this year, and it's been great. And the theme that has, I think, popped up at this point is the Thinking Fellows book tour type deal. So we had Zoll on, we had Dave Zoll on, talked about Seculosity. We had Chad Bird on, talked about his new book, Unveiling Mercy. Now I thought we'd go back to some older books in the 1517 publishing
so
catalog.
You had to get the old men on to talk about the older books. I don't know how I feel about that.
You know, the reason why is there's an initial sale of books, right, when they first come out. The topic gets we do a lot of press on the show. We do a lot of sharing of it from all the other 1517 angles. And then a couple of years go by, and then that sort of goes into the catalog. Well, after those couple of years, we have a lot more listeners than we did 2 or 3 years ago when the various books you guys have helped put together have come out. So now it's a good opportunity to maybe hit an audience, a new part of our audience who hasn't heard of the books you two have published with 1517, which Dad includes Being Dad. Father's a Picture of God's Grace. There's the Jagger Word Field Guide to Being a Man, I think. Is that the title?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah. And then there's the Friendship Volume,
Where
Two or Three Are Gathered, which I think I even wrote.
You wrote for. Paul wrote for. Mm-hmm.
And so,
I wrote for.
And so, yes.
I think Caleb says, when I say he wrote for and I wrote for, he says he wrote twice for.
I did write twice for. It's a plain fact. What's great about that is most grad students have done that, right? They have ghostwritten something that a professor has used then with the professor's name on it. I'm one of the only grad students who gets to then, like, gaslight it. Gets to go, look at here. I've got a podcasting audience. I can tell the plain truth here.
Yeah.
But he put in, I'll give him credit, he put in a bunch of quotes
from memory
between Luther and Melanchthon with, like, the full footnotes in there that I didn't know about, and definitely added some spice to the chapter. Definitely added the seasoning.
Well done, Scott.
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
So let's talk about those books. There's a theme in the books that you guys have done, and I don't want the lady listeners to turn off the show, but the theme is that in general, both of you have written books targeted at men. And again, not trying to isolate the lady listeners here, but there's got to be particular reason you guys have at least felt comfortable or felt the need to write those books, and then also maybe some experience, I mean, your life experiences as men, right, about why you can say something about the problems you've identified.
I'd say even when I started writing Being Dad, was right around, I wouldn't say this is the time we started Jagged Word, but it's not too long.
Yeah, it was close. Sure.
Maybe a year or so. Mm-hmm. So we started, I don't even remember what year, Paul. Was
Jagged Word, I don't know either.
2012, maybe?
Yeah.
I was at Paul's house, and I think he'd done you had a blog before that, maybe, did you?
No, this was the first.
Okay.
What was that whole, I think I'm going to start a blog.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, I want you to write for it. And I was like, I've never even read a blog.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And originally, Paul wrote, I think, for about 2 weeks by himself.
Yeah.
And then I started writing. And then it was just you and me for a while.
Wow. Yeah.
And we weren't releasing every day. I think originally we were doing a couple a week. You would do your sermon in one, and I think I did one or two a week. Yeah. But pretty quickly he did. I didn't recruit anybody until later, and that kind of splashed out. But Joel Hess, I think, came on.
Yeah, Joel, and then Graham.
Graham Glover.
And that was kind of the bedrock for a while.
There. Yeah. And those early days of writing for Jagged Word were like the Wild Wild West. I mean, this is before 1517.
That's right.
And eventually I had been, this idea of being dad had been kicking around, not as that title, but had been kicking around in my head since Concordia days. And I was just kind of waiting to make sure you guys all made it grown up-ish okay before I did.
You're waiting for your children to all be adults and not total life failures.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And so, well,
hey, glad I'm not a failure.
But we started talking. I mean, Paul and I were hanging out a lot back then, and it made it really easy to just talk about chapter ideas and format and how would I do this. And I think I even did a couple preliminary articles on Jagged Word as like feelers. And then I think I gave a talk at his church as like a feeler for how this would go. And it was, I mean, it, I couldn't actually think of a better way to do that because I had never written a book before. I mean, I'd written articles, but like, more scholarly articles, you know.
Yeah,
3,000 to 5,000 words.
Stuff you make fun of now.
Yeah, footnoted. You know that nobody reads. Right. And so blogging and writing for a popular audience, I think when you're trained to write academically, it's not easy. In fact, a lot of the people that we wanted for 1517 too, that we wanted to come write for 1517, and it's Jagged Word, just couldn't. They couldn't make the transition. It's just they're used to a different way of speaking.
Right.
But that helped out a lot with writing Being Dad, and Paul's friendship at that time helped out a lot with writing Being Dad, because it was hard for me to remember this perspective of being a dad to young kids.
and
he had a bunch of young kids.
That's right. Yeah.
And, so bouncing that off of him, it just, you know, and then he and his wife Cindy had Rod as a professor. And so they knew the stories as well as I did, and, you know, could, they both actually could critique my interpretation of those stories, you know, and misapply it, apply it. And it's just, I'd say to do a book like Being Dad, there's probably a lot of books you could do non-collaboratively, but it's difficult to do a book like Being Dad non-collaboratively. Well,
you collected stories at the back end of Being Dad. That's one of the things. So in each
chapter.
Yeah, in each chapter, Paul wrote couple of those.
Paul, Bob Hiller, Joel Hess.
Yeah. Bob wrote for the Jagged Word forever too.
Yeah, but he's
he came later though.
Not much, but at least a couple years, I think.
Yeah. A lot of those baseball ones.
That's right. Remember that sports stuff.
That was one of the, and probably still is one of the unique things about Jagged Word. When Paul recruited people to write, he recruited them. He had a gift for seeing the strength of their interest and would recruit them to write on that strength. Yeah, and so it's not like for 1517, let's say, it's either all theological or apologetic with like maybe some cultural spread in there and everything. But this was like, you're writing on culture. You're writing on this.
Yeah,
it's like a newspaper editor, you know, and you're hiring a sports journalist and a politics person and on. And it was unique. It's it gave and gives, I'm sure, Jagged Word a flair that is nice because there's not always agreement between the authors on everything.
Right.
Like, I remember Graham and I specifically wrote some articles, like, against each other.
Yeah. Those were fun. We did that not too long ago, a few months back. I wrote something about, I think I called it, like, the church's failure in the face of the crisis. Mm-hmm. And Graham all of a sudden came out of the woodwork again. And
church said, hey, success. Can
I? Yeah. And so then he wrote something. And then I wrote right back at him about he's one of those guys who wears face masks driving alone in his car. So that's anyway, I just like taking shots at Graham. So, but yeah, no, it makes it fun. But the camaraderie, the friendship.
Yeah.
So it comes to that. And that shows up in the, certainly the friendship Word. Books, the Jagged Word book.
Yeah. The Jagged Word book came about to answer your question. That book came about because Paul and I realized that specifically he and I, but a lot of the other guys on Jagged Word too, had just done a lot of writing on Jagged Word towards fatherhood, masculinity, friendship, specifically probably male friendship.
Yeah.
And then a lot of levity writing too, like on the joy of smoking a good cigar or a finely crafted glass of a bourbon, and there's articles on that. And it just always, I think one of the goals for writing on Jagged Word had to do with, because we weren't all together all the time, but kind of like the inkling sort of thing where you're just writing, you know, you're not, it's not just all theological writing.
Right.
You're writing, and there's a group of guys around you that are helping you craft that writing and make it better. And so you write about a lot of stuff, but we noticed a common thread.
Yeah, for sure. Enough to, I remember you, like, can you pull? And so, like, I pulled together a list and realized we already had a massive amount of material.
Yeah.
It needed, obviously.
Several hundred pages.
It needed to be organized and edited and all that good stuff, but it was there. And it just came organically. Like it came as part of what we were all doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And there was a lot of crossover there between being dad. I mean,
sure.
Being dad is trying to portray a positive, maybe I'd say encouraging picture of being a father in an age that discounts fathers.
Yeah.
You know? And then the Jagged Word Field Guide does a lot of that same stuff having to do with being a man, being in friendship, what it's like working for a living.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those in there. Avocational stuff, vocational stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's just, they're a good combo. I always told, when I do speaking gigs, I'm like, these are things you should buy together because you'll probably learn a lot from being dad.
Yeah.
And you might learn a lot from the Jagged Word book, but you're going to, even if you don't learn a lot with it, it's not a difficult read because it's like 1,000 words at a time.
Yeah.
Pick it up, put it down, pick it up, put it down. But it's fun.
Yeah. We used to tell people it's like that perfect, back of the toilet when people used to do that before they had cell phones.
It's on the back of the toilet at the at the recording studio.
Yeah.
It's perfect because, you can just read a little one. And some are just funny. Some are,
Some are sad. Some are serious. Yeah. It's a great little book. I think it's one of our underrated offerings at 1517, just because it's not serious. It's not trying to change your life. It's
right.
So it's just anecdotes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
There's a common theme through the three books, I think, that speaks a lot, maybe even like heavier than usual this year, which is a type of loneliness. Present in each book. Being dad, starts with your story of growing up without a father because your father died, the longing for a father. A lot of people you talk to, and you talk about this in book, can relate to even a father being there, but sort of like presently absent.
Yeah, presently absent dads.
The field guide has a lot to do with this as well. We're sort of talking about stories where other people draw you out of yourself. I don't think any of the solution in there to be a man really has to do it with going alone.
Right.
And then obviously the friendship book as well addresses a society of loneliness and particularly the vocational or divine parts of being a friend, and how a friend isn't just somebody who's sort of like present, but actually brings the word of God to you,
yeah,
both directly and indirectly. This year is a year of loneliness.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it's funny to me that since the friendship book, the Where Two or Three Gather book, I had been just sort of working on some data on male loneliness, and it's kind of terrifying. I mean, it's, yeah. Male suicide rate, usually attributed to loneliness as the reason, is 3 times that of women. Oof. And when I would give this talk, I'd say, you know, raise your hand in the room if you know of a man that's committed suicide. And it's
everybody in the room.
Nearly 100% every time, right? And if you say, raise your hand if you know a woman that's committed suicide, it's usually 2 or 3 people out of 50. You know, and it's just, it's staggering. And it's just not talked about. And even if you have good friends, right, and if you've written a book on friendship and a bunch of articles on it, you think you're immune to it.
Right, you're not.
And then you realize you're not. I mean, you just realize you're not. I can't tell you. I mean, I've gotten texts from Paul saying, we need to get together. My friend Aaron, this happens all the time too. And we have these friends, but it's just the society is sort of hardwired to drive us apart, not together. And it's shocking how deep and how fast it can hit you.
Yeah. And I think, it's that, the thing when you get together, it's that all, you know, you and I, Scott, we've got that kind of relationship. We had years where we were apart, and then saw you at a conference in Fort Wayne of all places. And it was like picking up, like we were still in college almost.
Straight out of the Four Loves, man.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
And it was and so you cherish it then, and then you I don't know, I think part of it is our society's built that way. I think in our country certainly there's this romanticizing of the kind of the lone kind of man does it on his own by himself, and it's in those gatherings together that we're reminded that that's a lie. I mean, we desperately need that actual gathering around each other. Like I like you brought up, in this time with everything going on, when I came out to see you, it was after Easter, I think, right? Yeah. And it was, it was just kind of rough. You know, I'm trying to figure out how to pastor a congregation, all this, but you were pulled away from people. And man, coming up, I was just up for one night, but it was so nice to just like be there, hang out, laugh, go out four-wheeling, record some of these. You know, it was kind of reinvigorates everything to get together. And so I think it's one of those things that we don't grieve it as we're just living our lives. Like we don't recognize how much we miss it until later.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year for me on that front. I have, I mean, COVID was in some ways a blessing in disguise for some of the things that have changed in my life and changed permanently, like able to sort of realize that my wife could stop working and get some of that back. But even then, a lot of my friends had forced time off, right? Like they work in various industries where going into the office or going into the store or whatever it is weren't there. And so I've spent more time with my friends in person this year than I have in 2 or 3 years since college. This year I've seen 4 or 5 friends, some of them who have come and stayed up in Big Bear with us for, you know, a week or more because people didn't have work. And you could call, and I called my buddy and like, come down. Come stay with us for a week. Just if the state's going to say you can't be at work, let's just
sit home alone.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's been an interesting.
It's funny how much of a rebel you felt like doing that. Somebody came up to your house. Like, I'm a rebel.
That's right.
What happened? Oh, it's dude I know for I've known for 25 years. Spent the night. It's like, okay.
Whew. I think there was an interesting opportunity there, and I think it's an opportunity that will extend into the end of the year, and who knows?
Yeah.
After that, to sort of, you can take these situations, and I guess if you are willing to be a little bit of a rebel, or maybe just say, take on the risk of friendship here in this instance, there's some opportunities.
That's one of the things we wrote about quite a bit in the past, is that friendship's a risky business. It just is. Like, you expose yourself. You're seen as outsiders to the rest of the world because you're a group. Lewis warns about that as one of the dangers of friendship, right?
Well, people get offended when they're not in the group, right? And this is one of the things that I remember being at Concordia, and like the student council body would have like messages every once in a while, right? And their big, I think it was my junior year, their big like message in there, and the thing that they put all this like marketing and the pamphlets that went out was like, Concordia needs to end the clickiness. Too many people have just their group of five friends, that's right. And that's it. Yeah. You go and you sit on isolated tables at the CAF, and you don't have friends from all over the campus. And I was kind of like, well, duh. I've been here for 3 years. I found the people I
that's
like.
Right. Yeah. That's right. I got my friends. They're like, fine.
I don't need any more. I'm good. I'm tapped out.
You know, it's funny. You're saying that last night. So the the live stream, all the stuff is going on here. There's not a lot of folks here, you know, because it's obviously just this small contingent from 1517. And there's still, even with that small number, there's still a bunch I haven't even talked to yet. And to your point, last night during dinner, I sat at a small table with your dad, and we laughed hard late into the night. I didn't talk to
anybody else
at the whole. It was like we were just like sitting there and had a great time, and I don't regret that at all. It was like, I'll say hi to those guys sooner or later. And they're all lovely people. It's not that. It's just, you know, I was having a good time.
Yeah. We don't get as much of a chance to do that anymore. No. We need to.
So that's, unfortunately, that's one of the things that like about the Here We Still Stand conference for me. Yeah. That's actually my favorite part of Here We Still Stand every year. I mean, talks are great. Don't want to discount talks, including one that I will be giving next year during a breakout.
Oh, my gosh. And, every episode.
Wait. No, the reason why is, listen, if you're registering for the 2021 Here We Still Stand conference, which you absolutely should do, I'm in a competition, an unspoken competition. Loso doesn't know he's in this competition.
It feels kind of spoken.
Okay. Loso doesn't know he's in this competition, but I need to beat Loso for the big room for the breakout. There's a big room for the breakouts. If you're a Thinky Fellows listener and you're coming to Here We Still Stand 2020, register for Caleb's breakout.
That's how they determine the size of the room, right?
Yeah, who gets the most registered. Yeah,
all right. That's
You can pick mine. We're shooting for the big room next year, guys. Thinky Fellows listeners. You know, when you get to choose your breakouts.
Are you doing this on Outlaw God, too?
I will be. Okay. I told Dan Price, I was like, listen, I'm never going to beat Loso at a battle rap, but I might be able to beat him at this.
That's right.
So,
I'd love to see you try to beat him in a battle rap.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
That's not going to work. But no, Here We Still Stand, generally speaking, not this year. Is a gathering of
a
lot of people.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And you see friends you haven't seen for a long time. You meet new people. Somebody catches your ear and pins you down, and you end up talking for. You look down at your watch and it's 1 a.m. and you realize you got to be at breakfast at 7. And that's one of the great parts of that. And I think this year also we moved. Everything was digital. We've maybe seen people, but by seeing people we mean like on a camera, right? And it's hard to get that sort of unique, risky conversation going on when Zoom and Google might be recording everything you say.
Or it might cut out, or the audio cuts out for 5 minutes, or you're not picking up on the facial cues that somebody was done talking or not done talking. It's just, it's not the same thing. I'm going to get on a bit of a rant here, so get ready with my mute button. We can call this the new normal all we want, but it's not normal.
Right.
Right. This is not how humans are not adapted to interact with one another via a screen and a thousand miles. This is something that was, I remember traveling to Europe in 1997 when we did, and I was married and you were born and Josh was just born, and not being able to see anybody for 2 weeks or really even reliably talk to anybody for 2 weeks was difficult. And it's certainly better when I go now that I can hop on FaceTime and see people.
Right.
But it's not an actual substitute for the real thing.
Right.
It's at best, a temporary Band-Aid, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that we are trying to turn this into the new normal is not a good idea.
It's funny because this year has...
Especially not within the church or within the gospel or within the body of Christ.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and this has changed something that for years, I think most people, including myself, had viewed as sort of like an awesome gift in the form of like good video communication,
sure.
Right? Like
we rely on it at 1517.
Yeah, we use it at 1517. We use it in personal ways, right?
But not for relationships.
You know, my kids' other grandparents live in Minnesota. You can call grandma. Grandma can talk to you and see you.
Grandma sure likes it better when you show up in Minnesota in the car.
It's way better when you show up in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think we can just lean into like it's over. We're just seeing people over video now.
Yeah, right.
Video is sort of like, is supposed to, at its best, make you long for the real interaction, right? Like it might help you get there, but in reality, it actually should make you wish that you were there and down the road, do something about being there.
Yeah, I mean, friendship is a difficult thing to start or maintain via video conference. Again, friendships can endure periods of silence.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think that's one of the things that makes them distinctly different from marriages, right?
You can't have a marriage where you didn't talk to each other for 10 years.
Yeah.
You don't see your wife for 10 years, pick off right where you left off. That's probably not going to work.
So the books, you know, we're talking about how there's some crossover themes. Loneliness, definitely one of them. On the flip side of that is the camaraderie. You guys have been talking about, Paul, I just saw you post pictures of going somewhere with your son.
Yeah.
And those trips are like sort of, I mean, there's a difference in the relationship. My dad's my friend, but there's a difference in a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. But that's one of those areas where the being dad and the being a friend thing kind of cross over on the camaraderie of like...
At least it starts to on things like
these,
that.
These special trips out with your dad. So where'd you guys go?
I took my... You mean just recently I took my son backpacking.
Okay.
But it was a trail my dad took me on 30 plus years ago. I mean, I can still remember some of it. You know, I'm like, oh, I remember these rocks. And it wasn't a hard trail, but my son's just getting to that age where he can carry his own weight and he can go backpacking. And so we started doing that. But that, like my son right now is at that age and where he just loves spending time with me. And so there's like zero hesitation for him to go out and spend that time. And so I'm trying to cultivate that, you know, kind of instigate that. Let's go, whether it's working on the car or going backpacking or just down. We do a lot of trips to the hardware store because we have a household full of women. So, Titus, want to go to the hardware store?
Yeah,
sure. And they used to have popcorn at the hardware store.
And now they don't.
It's terrible.
Right?
Yeah. So, but anyway, we go out and do those things. But there's certainly that investment of real camaraderie is a good way to put it. Like I could sit in the car with my son and, you know, it's not like we're talking, but we're just there in the car together, you know, and that's actually worth something, you know? You know, you're spending that time and then you do, when the conversations come, you're learning about who this guy is, you know, and, letting him share himself too. And so we do that with our friends. Friendships are fascinating and confusing. You know, they're one of the things every time, you know, I think we've talked about friendship is people will ask those questions of how do they do that, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think we ever have a good answer.
No.
Because it's I've even gotten it.
Don't you ever get mad at them? I'm like, well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, and like, well, what do you do? And I'm like, I don't know. It's like, yeah. Yeah, it's just, they're your friend. It's like, you can be mad at somebody and still be their friend. You can be mad at somebody and still love them. And I think that's, we miss that a lot in our society. We miss that. Cancel culture doesn't encourage you to be angry with somebody and yet love them.
Right.
Or think somebody did something wrong and yet love them still. If they did something wrong, you know, they need to be punished, excised, driven out.
Well, you need new friends, right? Like, there are, I think that would be the big problem, right? Is like, if you do get angry at Paul, like it's time to go find new people. Is kind of the reaction that you would see now. Yeah. And I think that's pretty dangerous. I've definitely been upset at my friends before.
Yeah.
Too. And you're right. There are reactions within that relationship where, you know, sometimes you call them out. Sometimes you just kind of ignore it and it goes away. Sometimes you don't hang out with them for a little while. You get a breather. But it's not
an effort. One more difference between friendship and marriage.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's not in the effort of going, like, this person has sinned so gravely against me by,
well, even if they did, right. Is this a call for excising them from the friendship or for mustering? I think Paul called it a couple of years ago on a podcast we did at a pastor's conference, the courage to stand before them in the name of Christ and forgive them.
Yeah, your friendship...
That takes courage.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How strong do you think you are? Go ahead and stand in front of somebody that you think wronged you and say, I forgive you in the name of Jesus.
Yeah. Can your friendship withstand an absolution? Would be a kind of an interesting measure of it, right? That takes... On both sides, there's a certain...
I might steal that line.
Thank you. No footnotes. I mean, there's a certain level of risk in absolving somebody. We've talked about this on the show before.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of was at Pastor's Conference in Palm Springs. I don't know if you remember it, Paul, but...
I remember that audio. You two alone, I wasn't there. I get this file. It's like, this is ready for to publish. I'm like, holy cow. Those two are 2 miles from the microphone. It sounds like they're gargling their whiskey. What is going on?
There was some great stuff that came out of that too. Darren Cheek was there and he said some of that same stuff. But Ed Killian, wasn't he there?
Yep, he was there too. Yeah. Yes, you guys recorded a very, very editing heavy podcast for me to do.
Well, I'm glad you got a lot out of it.
Yeah.
Those ones are kind of fun because like it's a guarantee that I have to listen all the way through to those, right? Like I can't when we record these, you know, if there's something really atrocious, I'll take notes, right? If somebody misspeaks, you take a note and you can do something about it later. No, if you guys are together and you record at some bar without me, it's it's a listen slowly and all the way through type of thing. Why should people buy those books? You got 3 books. Man, I actually for a while we sold them as a package deal on the website. Like you could buy them as like a package deal, and obviously I think for the sake of this episode that makes a lot of sense, right? Yeah. That would be a package deal. Is this just like another Christian how-to series?
I don't think there's any how-to in any of it.
Yeah,
not even in Being Dad.
No, I think they're all very important. Conversations, important parts of your life to kind of, I mean, I could say, I was just sharing with Scott yesterday. I have a friend at church who's, we were commiserating over struggles with our children, and I didn't even know he had your book, Scott, and he brought it up. He's like, man, that thing has saved me. So not as a how-to, as far as like, here are the tips on being a great dad, but in the notion that, man, when you've tried the law, and it is not working.
And you will try the law.
There is another way.
Yeah, there's another word.
And that he held on to that and said, you know, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be this presence of grace for these kids. And so, you know, so it's huge that way. And I think the other one's like, you know, you asked just kind of like, how do you use them? But that, where two or three gathered, I've actually given that personally several times to, it's funny. I think about it. There are Christian men, newer to the faith though, and guys that have kind of come closer to me. Mm-hmm. And I go, here, I think you'd enjoy this. And it's, and they're always like, well, like, is this my copy? Like, yeah, just read. It's fine. Yours, give away, whatever. You know, I said, but it's, like, it's a helpful conversation again about what is this thing of friendship that, you know, it's almost kind of like a, again, it's not how to, it's not how to have friends, but there's a weight to this relationship.
Yeah. One of the things I like about that book is I asked a bunch of my friends to write the various articles in it.
Yeah.
And so you get to see the, just like even in their writing, the difference between all these different men who are all, to one degree or another, friends. All know each other, have known each other for years and years and years. One of the great things about that book is I asked Paul to write on the theology of friendship, and Paul starts out by saying, should there even be a theology of friendship? And I was like, that's amazing. That's like, couldn't ask a better question there. So yeah, that one, that's just different essays on various aspects of friendship. Some examples.
But I think that what's great about it is it's just that thing that not a lot of people stop to think about. I mean, clearly C.S. Lewis stopped to think about this. You got some great, like Cicero stopped to think about this. You know, you got some huge minds that did, but they just kind of talk through it that this is not a flippant thing or a light thing.
Yeah.
It's a crucial part of our lives. And so to think deeply about it is helpful.
And the Jaguar book is fun.
Fun.
It's fun. Yeah. There'll be parts of it that are meaningful and helpful, but it's just kind of a blast.
It's cool. It mimics, like, if you've ever seen it, if you've ever walked into Barnes & Noble and seen, like, every couple of years they, like, reskin, like, how to tie knots and fish and other cool skills.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, and you're like, I would like to learn how to fish with some string and a bottle opener. That's I think that's what that is in the midst of those books. And so it's, like you said, it's kind of fun. Well, hey guys, I mean, we made time. I will put links to those books in the podcast. Heck, I have some power over the store in a couple weeks, so maybe I'll even be able to get that bundle like back together. I'll have to talk to Eve over in publishing and see how logistically challenging that would be. But
awesome.
If you listen to this, you know, I said this at the beginning of the Dave Zoll episode. I realize that statistically people are reading less and less books every year. It's when we ask you to buy a book, and in particular we like ask or suggest that you read that book, we're asking for quite a bit of your reading time in the year. I think these are worth it. If this is something you're interested in, if you enjoyed sort of, I think, the friendly conversation of this episode or the episodes that Paul's been on in the past where we sort of just cut loose and have a fun episode, I think you'll like, I think you'll like the Jagged Word book. I think you'll like the friendship book. And being dad is a 15-17 classic at this point. It's sort of, I think
it's a staple.
I think it defines sort of how to do a book on a very specific vocation.
Yeah, it was our first. It was our first single author, single subject book too.
Yeah, not an edited volume, and so because of that, it flows different than these other two books that we're talking about too, which are edited volumes. So, yeah, and you know, all the books at 1517 Publishing, one of our main goals is to keep them affordable. I think if you notice, they're not extraordinarily expensive, and yet. We've tried to put some serious quality into them, and so you could get all three of these in hardback for a price better than a lot of single books in hardback. So yeah, go ahead, shop that 1517.org. The books are also available on Amazon. I'll add double links in the show notes. Thank you for joining this episode of the Thinking Fellows Book Tour. We'll catch you next time. Bye.